Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is Full Change with Tom Laidlaw.
Hey there, Tom. How are you?
I am fired up.
We're going to have a good show today. We're going to have on Jigs McDonald. I know you're looking forward to this one for a long time. This is going to be a good one.
When you called me, I don't know what it was, and you called me and said that he was going to come on the show, I think it's the whole history, you know, his voice, listening to him call the games, the personality is. Again, I really didn't know him that well. We got to be buddies just passing. You know, he did some games up in L.A. when I was there, some national games. But I think just the, like I said, it's the history. I'm just looking forward so much for him just to listen to his voice and tell some stories.
He's going to tell some great stories. And he's a legendary announcer for the Islanders and their dynasty. Just a wonderful human being. It's a great, you know, really solid guy. People are going to like this. But I got to tell you a cool story. Last night I was at the Ranger game. They beat Columbus 4-1. I went with my friend Jimmy D. We sat up in the upstairs in the suites. And I was looking for a picture of, I know there's one of Don Murdoch. So you know that suite level, they have those old pictures from the garden all around. They rings around the thing. So I wanted to see the one of Don Murdoch and send it to him, you know, show him our buddy Don. So show him some love, still love for him there. I know he doesn't come out to New York much. Yep. So I'm walking with Jimmy. I'm looking for these pictures. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I stop. I go, holy shit. And I see a picture on the wall. I'm like, that's me.
Oh.
Now, I always wanted to be a Ranger. It didn't work out so well. It wasn't that good. You know, couldn't skate that well. But I was a huge fan. And then, you know, one day a dream would be to have my picture up at Madison Square Garden. And it's there. There's a picture from 1983 of Nick Fatiu signing an autograph through the glass of the player bench. And it's me with Nick Fatiu.
Really? Did you get a picture of the picture?
Of course I did. I got a picture. I got video. I was like, this is so cool. Like, I couldn't.
That is good.
It blew me away. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm in that picture right there.
Oh, that's very cool.
So
was he signing an autograph for you? Or you were just...
He was signing an autograph for a woman, but my friend Jeff Carabin and I, my dad took us to the game. We were probably, I don't know, 12 years old. We went down, you know, my father would like tip off the security guard and we'd go down to by the bench and he was signing autographs. I guess he was a healthy scratch. And I remember he gave us pucks, threw each of us a puck, and then he was signing autographs for us. And I remember the photographer captured a picture and I thought it was the coolest thing, but then, you know, just forget about it. And then we're walking through, I'm like, holy shit. It's like, there's a picture of Elton John, and then there's this one over here, and Mick Jagger, and then it's like Fatiu and fans, and I'm the fan. That's and it was cool. Just super cool, super surreal, you know?
Yeah, that's very cool.
I think the count, I think there's one Tom Smith picture hanging in MSG and zero Tom Laidlaw pictures, though.
That is accurate. This is accurate. But my jersey is retired. My jersey
is
retired.
It is. It's spelled wrong. They spelled your name L-E-E-T-C-H. But
we won't dwell on the negative, though. We just looked at the positive.
No, it's wonderful. It's up there. And again, I always give you credit. You're probably the third best left-handed shooting, number two wearing defenseman in Ranger history from Canada. Well, second one from Canada, but third overall.
Yeah, that's true. I'm the second best Canadian number two.
You are second best.
Brad Park
clearly takes that. And you're but so we each have, now we have some fame at the Garden. I have a picture. And if anybody goes to the suite levels, if you're heading towards the Madison Club, you'll see. Just look around the wall. You'll see a picture of Nick Fatiu and a young Tom Smith with hair. And
I see. And now, listen, I was going to say that. Did you have hair? But I didn't. I held that back.
I was a little kid. So, yeah, I had hair. And my friend busted my chops. He's like, it wasn't gray. So, I of course, as what you do is you have your group text, and I send it to my friends. I'm like, check this out. This is so cool. And the guys I coach with, Andy Lane and Brian Strack, were just chirping me relentlessly. Oh. Well-deserved. They're like, oh, this was before color. And look at this
kid. That's good, though. How many people could say they got the picture up at the Garden that were athletes at MSG?
Well, hold on. I was an athlete. I just wasn't a professional athlete. Well,
you weren't an athlete at MSG.
That's true. That's true. I was a spectator. So, yes, me and Elton John will be in the
top. But I don't know if we can consider you an athlete when you tie your skates the way you tie them, like wrapping the laces around your ankles like that. I think that disqualifies you.
I think you might be right, but I did. So to continue that chirp, so now I had to defend myself. So these guys are Devil fans. So I played at the Prudential Center last week. I did score a goal in the pickup game, and I sent them the picture of it, which was captured. And they were like, well, is that the goalie for the blind team? And then they said, he can't lift his arm. Was he injured in the war? And they're like, the First World War. And it was like, great chirp, man.
Good.
So they got me, deserved. But so I had a little bit of fame at the Garden. I was very excited for it. I know you're like the center of this. You know, you're the famous guy here. But I was like, you know, I had a little bit of fame last night, so I was excited.
But, you know, I don't like to dwell on that fame part. Like, I don't talk about Survivor.
No. You never make yourself the center of attention, ever. You always share the mic, and you always let people talk. And, yeah, that's a good quality you have.
We're up at the charity game for the American Special Hockey Association last weekend. And a woman came by. She was local radio at the TV station. She wanted an interview. And she was like, and she felt bad that she was asking me to get interviewed. I was going, you kidding me? We're giving you the camera. I love the camera.
I live for this, right? You're like the Chuck Schumer of retired hockey players.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer, that's good.
Oh, I didn't remember. You'd run to it.
I did an event one time with him down in Chinatown. It was from Chinese New Year's a couple years ago. And he always talks about how great he is, all the things he's done. Oh, God,
that guy loves to find the camera. And
he is worse than me, yeah.
He'll go to an envelope opening, you know, if the camera there. You know.
That's good. You're on a roll today. You're butter.
Thank you. Nice one. Very nice, man. What's the etymology of that word, butter? But yeah, so this should be a great show, man. This is going to be one we're going to like. He's an Islander, but classy guy.
Oh, incredible. I'm looking forward to this one. Yeah. Good job. You get him.
Yeah, this is going to be great. And if, you know, spread the word around about the Full Change podcast. Hammering towards 100 episodes coming up soon.
Straight to, you know, we gotta get 99. I gotta get Gretzky on for the 99th show.
Working on it. Wayne, come on. You know, both of us. Let's go. Let's...
You're listening. I know you're listening, Wayne. I know you're listening.
Luke Robitaille, help him out. Get him on here. Or actually, we'll talk to Glenn Healy. We'll get. Yeah. We're working on Wayne. Yeah. Okay. We'll get him on.
All right, great show coming up.
Jigs McDonald. Here we go. Good morning, Tom. We have one you've been looking forward to today. We have a great show. We have a true legend, an Islander legend, a Hall of Fame broadcaster, and a well-respected and well-loved guy. We have John Kenneth Jigs McDonald on the show today.
Oh, man, I love this guy. Man, I don't know. We were talking before the show here. We've hit it off. We spent some time together at the Islander Ranger games and out in L.A., but for some reason, I just always admire this man. Great person. Great job.
You're too kind. I think the John, isn't there a John in your name somewhere too?
Thomas John, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, John Kenneth.
Well,
just to quote Jack Kent Cook, as fine a name as I've ever heard. However, it has no recall value. And Kendrick Ronald, it has no recall value.
All right. So how'd you get the Jigs? Where'd that come from?
Well, that was Jack Kent Cook. Actually, Jigs goes back probably grade six or seven, somewhere in that area. Everybody was coming up with nicknames, and all of a sudden, I'm Jigs. And Jigs, why? There was a comic strip bringing up Father, Jigs and Maggie.
Huh?
And my father had kind of a striking resemblance to the comic strip character. Huh. So they named me Jigs. I never used it. I mean, I got into broadcasting right out of high school, and I was never Jigs, but Jack Kent Cook. Everybody had to have a nickname. Like Chick Hearn was Francis Hearn.
Oh.
But he was Chick to everybody. So Cook said, actually, it was in Guelph, the first training camp. You have to have a nickname. We got to manufacture something. So, you know, let's go with Scotty. Oh, no, too plain. Threw around a couple of things. And finally, he pounded his fist on the desk, Tom. He just... cranked his fist on the desk. Damn it. He said, you must have had a nickname. We've all had a nickname, and I wish I could remember what he said his was, but his brother was Dinks and his sister was something. And anyway, I mumbled, Jigs, speak up. I can't hear you. Jigs McDonald. Marvelous. I said, well, what's wrong with Ken? He said, you say can, it rolls off your tongue, it goes through this ear, out this ear. You don't have to say, excuse me, what did you say your name was? Jesus, perfect. We'll use it.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We did. He was right. Hate to admit it, but he was.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. That's a famous name now. So there's you, there's Sam Rosen, Kenny Albert, these kind of guys. Aaron, what it is, but you guys are all so great at your job and had called these historic games, but you're fantastic people too. It's just amazing that they all have that in common.
You're too kind. Yeah, Kenny, Sam, I mean, when you think about the fact that the league is 32 teams now, and with radio in some cases they're simulcast, but you've got 55, 60 guys doing this, and a lot of retired too. Good people, all of them good people.
Yeah, you know? Very true. So where did you grow up? Where's home?
Downtown Ayr, Ontario, A-Y-R.
Where is that? I'm from Brampton. Where's Ayr?
Well, Ayr, if you get on 401 and go west toward London,
right?
It's in the Kitchener area. Actually, it's midway between Kitchener to the north and Bradford to the south.
Oh, okay. I know the area. Sure, now it makes sense. Okay. Very cool. So do you grow up being a hockey player?
I'm not sure that I even grew up, Tom.
Oh, there you go. I like that answer.
I tried. I was an overweight kid who couldn't skate backwards, tried to play defense. I have great respect for you, number two, and everybody who played the game. No, I could call the game in my head. I knew what to do, but I couldn't get there. There was not a chance. So, no, broadcasting became my love. Not necessarily hockey play-by-play until later on in my early stages of the radio career, but no, as far as being a player, not going to be there.
So wasn't hockey at first? What sport was it that you called?
Well, actually, hockey was at first.
Okay.
The little radio station I was at in Lindsay, Ontario, to begin with, home of the Maloney brothers, by the way, right?
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a 1,000-watt station, and one of the veteran salesmen, trying to remember, the Minden Monarchs were playing the Napanee Comets in a all-Ontario final, and he thought he could sell a broadcast, but who was going to do it? Well, I guess it would be me, because I read the sports scores twice a day, I think, on the station, plus being a disc jockey. He did, went to Napanee for the road game in the series. I think it was a best of three. And said, you know, this is fun. I enjoy doing this. So prior to that, I'd taken a tape recorder down to the Lindsay Community Center and tried to pour my heart into a demo tape. Yeah. It was all right, pretty rough. But then when I got to Orillia, I went to Orillia in 1958, I guess it was. The station had a very good sportscaster. Name was George Franks. When George left to take a job in Welland, I became the sports guy, and we did obviously hockey. We did some baseball. I even went around the golf course one afternoon for the club championship with a little mini tape recorder. Well, actually, it wasn't a tape recorder. It was live. The station had just installed a two-way radio setup, so I did some golf as well.
Very good.
And then Olympics in 92, I guess it was, my first basketball experience for CTV.
Oh.
I said, gee, I'm not a basketball guy. Well, somebody's going to have a perfect seat. First time there was a dream team, might as well be you. And it turned out CTV needed a Canadian to do their broadcast. And I got hooked up with Jack Donahue, Mr. Basketball in Canada at that time.
Oh.
He'd been Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's high school coach. And anyway, just a great guy.
Wow, very cool. So, okay, so you talked about being a disc jockey. What kind of music?
It was kind of middle of the road. Until I went to Peterborough, I left Orillia. I think probably the only time that I just up and quit a job without anything to go to. I got upset with ownership one morning, that McDonald temper came into play, and I walked out. 6 weeks later, I was in Peterborough, which was a station owned by Chum. And I'm Rob. I remember Chump. Yes, I remember Chump. Okay. So everything was restricted. You had, I think, 7 seconds between records or commercials, but you had 7 seconds to be personable and do your thing. So that was time temperature tune. Did we lose or not? Is it going to rain? That's about all you could do. Anyway, after month and a half, the promise was that I'd get to do the Pete's. I'd get the Junior A franchise. Well, that didn't happen. So back to Aurelia, hat in hand and groveling and bended knee, because I knew I could do. By then, I was really enjoying the play-by-play. The opportunity to be more creative, to do anything really other than time, temperature, and tune was fun. So, they took me back, and we fast forward to 67 expansion and off to L.A.
Wow. Did you get any formal training for this? Or is it just something you learned on your own?
Just learned it on my own. Actually, learned it by listening and trying to copy some of the best, I thought the best in the business at that time, starting with Danny Galiban, Foster, of course, Foster Hewitt. But out of, did you ever listen to CHML out of Hamilton?
I don't think so, Jake. I don't think it.
The Tiger Cats football broadcast was done by Norm Marshall. And when Hamilton had a Junior A team, the Tigers were done by Norm Marshall. Norm had a distinctive style and really, really, you know, made you sit up and listen. So I tried to marry the three styles together as best I could and went from there. But as far as formal training, no.
That's pretty cool. So did you know, like you said to yourself, you don't want to be like somebody else. You've got to be like yourself. But you took a little bit from each guy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So then, so after that, you went to L.A.?
Yeah. With expansion in 67, the only team I applied to was Los Angeles. My thinking being that Jack Kent Cook, his background, his success story actually with Canadian radio, that this is a guy that's going to make it work. And that's, you know, let's take a chance. So my only audition, my only application was to LA.
Wow. So did you feel pretty confident at that point that you were going to get that job?
No, not at all. No. In the back of my head, Tommy, I'm thinking if they hire a guy from the American League or maybe even the International League, I've got a shot there perhaps. I can get into their farm system or establish myself somewhere. As a cute little aside, my wife and I were talking the other night about where we've been over the years, and it's at LA. Said, were you as shocked as I was when I got the call? I didn't think you'd ever get it. I didn't think you'd get it. Thanks for the confidence, dear.
Nice. That's funny. But being honest, you get an honest wife there. That's one good thing.
Yeah, very, very honest. Can I tell you a quick story?
Yes, all day long.
The application or the getting the job process took forever. I set the third period of the Senior A game, or rather than I forget who the other team was. Anyway, I get a letter that the process is underway and I'm in the mix, the final group of whatever. And emphasize an underlined letter because Jack Kent Cook did not spend money on long distance telephone calls. Everything was done by U.S. mail. He was going to be in Toronto. That was the year that the North American Soccer League was coming into existence, and he would be in Toronto at the Royal York. Could I meet him there? Yeah. So I go to Toronto and call the room, and I'm told by Eddie Pars, it turned out, that Mr. Cook had somebody with him, but yes, please come up to the suite. I do. I wait 5-10 minutes. The door opens, and who comes out of the suite? Jack Head Cook, Larry Regan, who was going to be the general manager, and Leonard Red Kelly, who is playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, yeah.
Do I have a story, ladies and gentlemen? Tomorrow morning, sportscast will be let. No, wait a minute. If you want that job, McDonald, you're not telling that story. No. At that time, of course, there was, there were obviously NHL restrictions on... Yeah. So, yeah, I had a story that I couldn't tell.
Yeah, so people know, like a head coach in a suite with another team's owner, that's taboo. You do not do that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. As then, of course, he had to. Well, he was going to draft Red as part of the LA expansion process. Well, I forget who the player was that was drafted from Toronto, and the league's filled with Red Kelly. Oh, is there concern at the table of the draft day?
Yeah.
I know I'm rambling on here, but
no, keep going.
They had to make a trade. Kenny Block, who they had drafted, was traded to Toronto for the rights to Red.
Oh,
just man. And that afternoon, I get the assignment of going to the Sheraton Montreal and picking up Punch.
Oh,
and bringing Punch Imlach over to Jack Kent Cook's suite so they could hammer out this deal. And Cook was just livid. I mean, he was just, you talk about being red, but he was so furious. But anyway,
he's used to getting his way all the time too, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
That's funny. That's very good. So did you get the job at that point with that meeting?
Yeah. His request was, my play-by-play, I guess, was Laidlaw to McDonald to Smith to Jones back. He said, everybody probably knows who those players are, but do they have first names? And how old are they? And how tall? How big are they? Where are they from? Ooh. And Mr. McDonald, he said, you say the puck is in the corner. As I recall, the arena has four corners. Which corner is it in? It's behind the net. Is it our net or their net? Oh, yeah. Can you do that? Yeah, I think I can. I'll try to do that. So next night, I guess, or a night or two later, we had a line into the arena in Arena anyway. So I go down and put a tape on back at the radio station and try to do this. I think it was a midget game. I could not marry the first name, last name, or height or weight or anything that I knew about any of these kids. I could not make it work. Went home that night, I told my wife, forget it, this isn't going to happen. Friday night, we had Arena at Kingston Senior A, and I had a tendency to talk to whoever was on the board. It was a 10,000-watt radio station, but down to 1,000 watts at night. And I could convince the kid to forget to drop the power to 1,000 watts, leave it up at 10. Let's see if we can get a little better coverage here. Anyway, we go to Kingston, and it worked right from the opening face-off. Names, ages, height, weight, you know, not Laidlaw, Tom Laidlaw. Just everything just fell into place. So I was to take the tape to Toronto, get it to Larry Regan. He was going to Rochester to scout an American League game on the Sunday. He would ship it to L.A. because it was less expensive to mail it from the U.S., and I would hear from Jack Kent Cook the following weekend. The following weekend, we had a major snowstorm. Every time the phone rang, I was like, oh no, the 3-hour time difference, that's not going to work. I think we were probably the better part 2-3 weeks.
So then you're living in Ontario. Now you get moved to Southern California. How was that for you?
Oh, what an experience that was. I keep referring to how thrifty Mr. Cook was. He wouldn't move us. He provided an airline ticket for me and for my wife. There's so many sidebar stories here. I'd been in L.A. and then I had to get out of there because they knew I was there illegally.
Oh.
And I wasn't going to be able to stay. I went to Springfield for the naming of the, or renaming of the Springfield Indians to Springfield Kings. And then I had to go back to Ontario. And part of my job in Ontario was to set up training camp in Guelph. They had already made the arrangements with the arena and the hotel. And now we had the hotel wasn't going to deal with them for food. They had a deal for rooms, but we had a $9 a day budget. Okay, $9 a day per man. I brought it in at $9.25, and you can't believe the scolding I got. He said, you have no concept of mathematics. That's an enormous sum of money you're costing me every day. Breakfast was in the hotel across the street from the arena in Guelph. Lunch was catered in the community center hall. And I had, breakfast, I think, was 75 cents. Lunch was $1.25. Out of the $9, $5 was gone in rooms. I had $4 a day to feed the guys.
I didn't realize that. Okay, well.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, up and down the main drag there in Guelph, I couldn't find anybody to feed them for $2. Right. I was told there was a young chef at a golf course out between Guelph and Kitchener who might be interested. Go out, talk to him. He wanted three. We got to 250. He got to 2.25, and he said, I'm not going to make any money on this at all. But, you know, for the sake of having Terry Sawchuk and this guy and that guy, yeah. Okay. Well, nobody had a car. Nobody told me the players weren't allowed to have a car at training camp. The only people that had cars were Sawchuk and Bob Wall. And Bob, because his wife was expecting and he might have to go home any moment, right. That kind of thing. And Sawchuk, brilliant, Terry charged the guys to drive them out there. He'd make 2 or 3 trips. The first night, I think I was told we had 72 guys at training camp the first day, first week. And I think there was 46, 47 guys showed up the first night. The next night, there was 20. And it just fizzled out.
Oh.
The hotel was so upset with this deal on food that they took the TVs out of the rooms. If you wanted the television, you had to go up and down the street, see if you could rent a TV. The entertainment was watching the train come in across from the Royal Hotel there. Well,
wow, that's funny.
Boy, it was wicked.
So how did you get back into the States, though? Because you're there illegally.
Fortunately, the union or whoever in LA backed away. They had filed with immigration. Jack Kent Cook, with his Washington connections, was able to get it through. But we didn't get our visas until I think we maybe had a week left in training camp that year. I'd already been on the air doing preseason games to LA. But yeah. So my wife, with a 3-year-old daughter and an almost 3-month-year-old, got on the plane to LA the week before I got there. I had rented a house, had to give it up. And then she went out and lived with Larry Regan's wife and I think 9 puppies, newborn puppies with these 2 little girls. She found a spot for us. Would you believe Palos Verdes? You know the area.
Yes, that's where I stayed. Yes, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, a long way from the Forum. Well, yep. Maybe not a long way, but a long traffic jam, especially. And I'm coming from a road with 2 stoplights. I could run them and be at the radio station in record time. But to spend 2 hours coming from the Forum, or Englewood, actually, the Forum wasn't open. The offices were there in Englewood. And to spend 2 hours trying to get home in the evening, I said, hello. So we ended up in Mar Vista.
Okay.
Not far from the Santa Monica Airport, and then bought in Westchester. And
very cool. Very cool. Yeah. And how many years were you in LA then?
I was there 5 years.
Okay.
Then I went to Atlanta with the expansion in 72, and it took me 8 years to put them out of business.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel? It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So my first year with the Islanders was your rookie season with the Rangers.
Oh, it was. I didn't realize that. I thought you started with the team. Okay, well, yeah. Who was there before you?
Jim Ryan was doing their Channel 9 games. Steve Albert.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I think Al Albert did some of them. Steve, Jim Gordon had done some the early seasons.
Yeah.
One of the stories that came up here when Atlanta left to go to Calgary, and I wasn't going to be going to Calgary because announcers were a dime a dozen. The Islander job came along, and a couple of guys in the business said, "What are you doing, Jake? Are you crazy? It's a graveyard for play-by-play guys. Look at the number of people who've been through there." Well, I needed a job. I've got bills to pay. So I go to the Island in the fall of 80. They'd won their first Stanley Cup.
Yep.
Was there for 15 seasons.
Wow. And good seasons too, man. That was good hockey back then.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the 84 series where we lost in overtime, Kenny Morrell scored? That was probably the best team I think we had as the Rangers, yeah.
Yeah. I'd gotten to know Herbie, the late Herb Brooks, and eventually traveled with Herb for a couple of years with Sports Channel America and just loved the band. I don't know if he was the best coach you ever had, Tom, or not, but...
For me, he was, yeah. Like, he was a certain kind of guy fit into his style, and I was one of those guys, so it was fantastic, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He could motivate, couldn't he?
Yeah. Well, you know what I think he was really good at, too, is understanding the people, like, as human beings, what made them tick, you know, how to push them the right way. And everybody wasn't the same. He treated everybody differently. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah. With the Sports Channel America days, we'd go to dinner, and somebody always would bring up the Smurfs.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The Smurfs, and breakouts out of your own zone. Yeah. Herb would get a pen, not just a ballpoint pen. He'd end up with a marker. The tablecloth was just, I mean, but because he was Herb Brooks, he could get away with it.
He had this thing with his hands, like he's moving his hands back and forth and everything, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What a gem. Just a great guy.
I saw him out. You were probably there. I saw him out in L.A. when I was there. And as a pregame seat in the morning, he was sitting in the stands and we sat together for a couple minutes. I said, "Herbie, how are you enjoying the TV?" He says, "You know me, Tom. Somebody asked me what time it is, and I tell him how to build a watch." So, he was really self-aware like that. And that was Herb. No question. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned sitting in the seats. The first year, he would not go down to the dressing room. You know, once the room was open and Herb would duck, he didn't want to talk to the other coach in front of people because, you know, that was fraternizing. And Herbie, no, that's how you get, I'll call him. I've got his number. And he did. He would call the coach in the afternoon, but he never, that first season especially, would not go down to the room and talk to any players.
Interesting. No.
And his wife, Patty, did you ever meet Patty?
Yes, I meant that. I've kept in touch with the family. His daughter, Kelly.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the son, it's awful. What was his son's name? Danny.
Danny. Yeah, Dan. Yes.
So I was his favorite player. So.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, well, yeah we're doing good.
But you know, I remember that Patty, he said, Patty can talk 130 words a minute with gusts to 400.
Those Herbieisms, man. He was funny. He was so into the team. I love this part of him. But some people kind of thought it was weird. His father had passed away during the season. So he left the team for a couple of days. And he came back telling the story how when he was at the church, he was looking at the different pieces in the window, the stained glass window, and how they all fit together to make the window. And that's how he looked at us as a team, that we all fit together to be a team. I thought it was fantastic. Some guys like, "Herb, you're at your father's funeral, and they're thinking about hockey, for God's sake." But that was Herb, yeah.
Just great.
Okay, so you get there. They won the first cup with the Islanders already. Now you're walking into like a dynasty, right? Did you realize it was going to be that good? Like, had a feeling that team was going to be that good?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, in getting the job, talking to Bill Torrey, this is when the league had the annual meetings in June in Montreal. I had stopped in New York on my way to Montreal. I met John Pickett. And I'm checking into the hotel in Montreal, and Bill Torrey walks up behind me, and he said, I heard you had a great meeting. Oh, word has spread. He said, we'll talk before the weekend is out. So we talked on the Saturday morning, somewhere probably seventh, eighth round of the draft. And he said, if you choose to come with us, he said, we're going to win this for a lot of years. And I stepped back and said, Bill, you really think if you go back to Philadelphia for a seventh game in that series, you win? Yes, I do. I said, the offside goal, the high stick, Well, he said, Kenneth, they always called me Kenneth. I was several jigs with Bill. Oh. Kenneth, I'm telling you, we're going to win it.
Wow.
So this was June of '80 after having won the first cup. He was right. Man, that hockey team, they could find a way.
Well, it's interesting that he said that, because that's the way I looked at them too, that they just found a way to win. Like you said, it was an offside. But you know what? They always had the offside. The bad bounce for Randy Carlyle, John Tinelli picks it up. You know, they found a way to do it all the time, right? Right?
Oh, I thought this is all over.
Yeah.
I mean, that series opened with two wins on Long Island, the best of five series, right? And go to Pittsburgh, and we walked across, everybody walked across the street from the hotel to the igloo with their bags. We're going home. I mean, it's an automatic. It's over in three.
Right.
Lose it. Lose game three, and it's an Easter Sunday. Stay over, play again Sunday night, lose, and you go home for game five, and you're down, and and it should have been over. I mean, the save that Smitty made, Mike Bullard, I believe. Yeah,
Bullard. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, oof.
But was it amazing, though, for that many years to always, like you say, it's breaks, but to do it all the time like that, it's not breaks, right? It's they never found a way to get it done. Yeah.
And there were injuries. I mean, there were always somebody down there. Yeah, look at Kenny Morrow coming back to play on one knee practically. Yeah. It was a team that everybody accepted their role. Nobody, I don't recall anybody ever complaining about ice time. Money, contracts.
Yeah.
But
like Billy Carroll being that fourth line centerman, right? Exactly the perfect guy for that role, right?
Yeah. When he, when they traded Chico, you know, you say, ooh, Smitty, what's going on here? But Rolly Melanson came in and accepted his role. It was an amazing bunch to be around. I often say that a lot of the credit over and above Al and the team that Bill Torrey put together, the training staff, Ron Wasky had measured, I guess, what we would call body fat or conditioning three different times in the year. And his goal was the 1st of March. If you were at a certain level by the 1st of March, all was good. If you were not, bang. Everybody worked, and the conditioning aspect. The other thing was that I don't know if it was Al or Bill, but they would shut down personal appearances or anything outside of hockey the 1st of March.
Right.
There was nothing. You just geared up for play in April and May. Right.
And they all stayed in the hotel too, right, during playoffs?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, wow. I understand after the fact that a couple of them would sneak out and go home. But as long as they were there, checked in at 11 o'clock at the hotel and at home for home games. Yeah.
One thing that gets missed about that Islanders team, and Jiggs can speak to this, is that there were 16 guys who won all four Stanley Cups. That's an astounding stat. That team stayed together. They knew each other. But I did want to ask, Jiggs, did you think that Tom's Rangers had them in 84?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The shot, I guess it was Kenny Morrell, Sutter cuts across in front. I thought it went off Sutter, but I thought that series is over.
Should have won in game four in the Garden. That's when he should have won it. Really.
Yes. Yeah. That was a strange one that night.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a story about going to the Garden the first time as an Islander broadcaster?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. I've been played the Rangers, Atlanta, this is before your time again, Atlanta had a tendency to play the Rangers at the Garden on New Year's Eve, and the team always picked up the New Year's Eve dinner at Dewey Wong's, a Chinese restaurant. Anyway, and now with Eddie Westfall, my first trip to Madison Square Garden is a New York Islanders broadcaster. Press room, Eddie said, well, we better go up. I look at my watch pretty early. He said, we better go up now. He said, before the blue seats were occupied. So we get on the elevator, up we go, and you walk around the back there to the broadcast area, and there are two or three guys sitting maybe four or five rows down below. Nobody else in the blue seats. And I overhear the one say, well, here's Eddie now. He'll probably know. And they turn around and said, Eddie, and the guy comes up. They say, yeah, you know, Eddie's always got the smile on his face. Kapow, he took a punch at Eddie.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, what's going on here? The others are running. This guy's running. Eddie wants to go after him. Out of nowhere comes a security guy or an usher and gets things settled down. The next thing you know, every time into the Garden, we've either got a security guy or we've got Mike Rypien.
Yes.
Mike would escort us up to the broadcast booth. Wow. Oh, and then, of course, I got myself in enough trouble with Ranger fans. And anyway, it was fun. It was an altogether different experience.
Remember all the brawls in the stands during the games? Like, there's more fights in the stands during the games.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. It didn't matter which arena, either at the Garden or at the Nassau Coliseum, the result. And the fact that the home games for the Islanders, there is always so many Rangers. And Eddie, to his credit, said, Jiggs, just keep in mind, if it weren't for the Rangers, there wouldn't be any Islanders.
Yeah.
You couldn't get tickets to a Rangers game. That's what brought about an expansion team on Long Island. And
Clarkie Gillies, he was fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, just one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about Bobby Nye being Mr. Islander. John Tully, I think, had the title for a little while. They had that competition Butchie and his. Anyway, Clarkie singing The Gambler, or singing whatever Kenny Rogers song came to mind for him. He was just unbelievable. We lived not too far from Clark. One of those typical Long Island snowstorms. We were socked into the house that we were in, but Clarkie was available. He had his plowed out or whatever. He came, picked me up and drove me to the game. He said, now I'm taking you home too, but we're not going right straight home, you know.
That's funny. Yeah. It is weird. Like, cause we hated the Flyers, but I don't think we hated the Islanders. There's respect there, but you know, obviously they beat us all the time, so we weren't too happy about it. But it was, like once I got to know Bobby Nystrom and Clark Gillies, like you really like your brothers because you got through so much stuff together. I was really fortunate in LA. I got to room with Bob Bourne and played together.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And then John Tinelli and I were teammates for a while too, for a couple of years. Tinelli's funny because you know John probably. John has some very expensive tastes. Like John likes to drive the Mercedes, go to nice restaurants. So I'm driving the pickup truck. So we would live close to each other, and we take turns going to the airport. We did a lot of it, obviously, in L.A. So when I drove, I'd go to the park in the long-term parking lot. It was like $10 a day. JT, and I'm exaggerating when I say this, obviously, but it's like he went to valet parking. Like he'd be mad at me so much. He's funny.
And if you can imagine this too, Jiggs, Tom and John Tinelli actually coached youth hockey together for some time.
Yes, I heard. Yes.
So JT and I, we played against each other. Like both coaches would usually put us out against each other all the time because they were hacking each other and cross-checking each other. We got to be great friends. So he asked me, his youngest son was going to be his last year coaching before he went off to prep school. So John had this really high-powered team and they're ranked number 6 in the country or something. So he wanted me to come and coach the defense. Well, it was hilarious, right? Because you know John, he is Mr. Intense at whatever he does. He's on the bench, like if a defensive makes a mistake, he's practically running down to the bench to yell at this kid. And I'm putting my hand up all the time, get back. Ferentz, after a while, it was hilarious because they'd see all this happening. And here's these two NHL guys that, you know, hated each other when they played against each other. But good man. But isn't that true? That team knows, like, it seemed like such good guys too. Like they're really character people.
Yeah. And, you know, the Europeans, like an Anders Kaller, Stefan Pearson, just fit right in that. The guys accepted them. Both were excellent hockey players. The epitome of team, I guess, what team is all about. You know, they, like I said, everybody accepted their role. They knew what the goal was, what May and June hockey, or actually it was April and May back then. To have won the number of consecutive series that they did.
Was it 19 consecutive series? Is that what it was?
Yeah, 19. Yep.
Do you think they'll ever get broken, that record?
It probably will, but I don't know that it can be done in the cap era. You know, when you load up with what, take a look at Toronto. I mean, you've got so much invested in those four forwards, and you don't address your weakness in goal or defense. And I always maintain goaltending will win.
Yeah.
Forget about the 6-5 or 7-3 games. Goaltending will get you the 2-1 or the 3-2 hockey game that you need at playoff time. That's where Spitty, Spitty. And Spitty played regularly as many games during the season as goaltenders do today. It would have been a different outcome, I'm sure. But he just, he was so focused. And
he had, and I mean, this is a good way, he had that arrogance too. Like, he just believed in himself so much. Yeah. Wow. So, Jinx, tell me, what was your highlight then? During that time, particularly that time with the Islanders, like you personally, the game you called, the goal you called.
Boy, I don't know that there's one in particular that stands out. You mean in the playoffs? In the,
well, just in general, your whole time there with the Islanders.
The whole time. The one that I keep overlooking. I've done a couple of podcasts over the years, and somebody will have to remind me of this one. The LaFontaine goal at 10 minutes to 2 a.m., the Easter Sunday morning classic in Washington. There's so many aspects of that goal, not just on the ice, but in the broadcast area, and the press room behind us, and trying to get to a men's room and the lineup. And that goal was unreal. I guess probably would be the goal that series against Pittsburgh, and the one that we've been talking about against the Rangers, against you guys with Kenny Morrow. Just the timing couldn't have been.
That whole game was unbelievable too. I watched that game recently. I mean, that was a great game.
And the other one, and this is in no particular order. Do I put Bossy's 50 in 50? You know, just coming down to the final minute to tie the Rocket Richard number of 50 goals in 50 games. There were a lot. Just a boy.
I can't
really single out one tongue.
That is a tough question. Of all the guys, the other stuff you guys have done, You know, Bossy was one of those guys too, like Rick Middleton, Joey Mullen. Like he looked at him sometimes like he's lucky, but then he's always doing it, right? And it's like,
But Boss was a different character. Boss, he didn't get Mike to talk too much or joke around the way Clark or Bobby Nye or Johnny T. Boss was a different animal. Have you seen the numbers for what the Bossy family is selling?
No,
the auction for the rings.
Yes, incredible.
Oh, man. One thing that I did read was that Mike didn't have anything on display. Everything was stored away in boxes, and he didn't talk a whole lot about his career.
Well, interesting. Yeah, they got $200,000 for each of the rings.
Wow, she did.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah,
Jigs, I want to ask you if you ever had the opportunity to call a Tom Laidlaw goal, because there were 25. I wonder if one was against the Islanders.
I don't think there was against the Islanders. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Not many people did. That's okay.
I was joking around the other day. We had somebody on the show, and I can't remember, but I was talking about LA. I went 120 games one time, and they scored a goal.
Playing with Gretzky.
Yeah, it was Gretzky, yeah. I had to try hard not to score goals. One of my favorite memories, it's kind of weird to say it this way, when Bobby Nystrom knocked me out, I had to spend late in the hospital in one playoff series. Late in the game, I was hitting a bunch of guys, and he was telling me, I can't, he said something to me, and he said, I'm going to get you or something. He elbowed me and knocked me down. And I got up all right and finished the game, but then once I went in the locker room, passed out, they had to spend the night in the hospital. But the weirdest thing was about it, I told somebody the story. I had told him how much respect I had for him because he called me before the next game. And he was, Bobby Nation wasn't afraid of anybody, so he wasn't afraid of me. He was just being a gentleman, called me, says, Tom, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do what I did to you. And that ended up being a knockout game. So we were shaking hands after, and he pulled me out of the handshake line and said again, he's, Tom, I'm really sorry. And I'll never forget that because, you know, it's Bobby Nation. He doesn't have to apologize to me for doing that. But yeah.
Isn't that the way, though, with the tough guys? There's a soft side to them.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember when Clarkie broke Eddie Hospodar's jaw?
Oh, yeah, that one. Oh, my. Well, yeah. You could hear the thud up in the broadcast.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was scary.
It was just a wallop.
Oh, yeah. Well, I heard from guys after that Clarkie was really upset after that he'd hurt him that bad.
Yeah, he would be. He would be. When you went to L.A., Pat Quinn, your coach?
No, he was gone by then. We had Mike Murphy was coaching when I first got
there. Oh, okay. That was when Pat got into the cab. And ended up going to Vancouver, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's right, too. Murphy's a great guy, too. And then we had Robbie Fattori come in and coach. And I played with Robbie in New York, so he was fantastic for me.
And you would have had Webby, too, right? Tommy Webster?
Yep. Yeah. And we did. That was one of the few coaches I didn't get along with, both in New York and L.A., yeah.
I don't want to really?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was late. I was starting to get hurt. You know, my first 5 or 6 years didn't get hurt at all. Then I started getting the bad back and missing games. And I think it was more in my head that I was thinking that people were looking at me differently now because missing. So I was, it was probably more my fault than his. But yeah. But the Robbie Fattori time when Wayne got there, I think they really enjoyed each other, liked each other. But they're two just totally different people, right? Robbie was a 45-second shifts. Wayne was staying out for 3-4 minutes. The best story, you may not have heard this. I've told the story a few times, but we were in Detroit playing. And we had a young goaltender, I think it was Fitzpatrick, I think. He was a young kid coming up. And we were, you know, maybe it was his first game. We were winning like 8-0. And Robbie had this rule that if you lost your temper on the ice in any fashion, or out of control, then you're going to sit in the bench. So Wayne turns the puck over at center ice, and they go down and score and ruin the kid's shutout. So Wayne's mad at himself. He goes and breaks a stick over the back of the net. And so we're in Detroit, right? It's basically a Canadian city. And so we now come in the locker room. We've got Larry Robinson, John Tinelli, Dave Taylor, myself, a whole bunch of veteran guys, you know. And the rumor starts going around the locker room that Robbie's going to bench Wayne. We're like little kids. We're giggling. Like, you can't do that. It's just, you don't do that. So lo and behold, we go out on the ice for third period, and Robbie benches him. And he's sitting on the bench. And the guys were just, because, you know, the veteran guys have been around so much, they're just dying laughing. They're thinking, Robbie, you might as well just pack your bags now or you're going home. And finally, Mike Krushelnitsky leans back to Robbie and says, you've got to put him on the ice. So at this point, though, you put him off, but it didn't matter. It's like he loses either way, right? Because now he's giving up on the rule. And one of the few times I ever saw Wayne lose his temper. You remember the old Detroit arena there, the cinder block rooms?
Yeah. Yeah, the Olympia.
Yeah. So Robbie takes, or Wayne takes Robbie down to one that's farther away from the locker room, thinking that we won't hear them. And all we hear is Wayne yelling, Robbie, 20,000 people came here to watch me play. They didn't come here to watch you coach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know,
did the players ever have any battles with Bill Torrey? John Tinelli had a little battle with a contract, right?
Yeah, and Pat LaFontaine as well. I think there were probably some others that the word didn't come out. But yeah, contracts and Bill Torrey. When we talk about the cap era, there was certainly an Islander cap era.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite the money that they got from TV, despite the fact the building was full all the time, the Pickets had a budget for Bill to maintain. There would be some contract issues, but again, there was only the handful that became public knowledge. Yeah. You talking about Robbie Fattori and Wayne. I had the game in Atlanta when Fred Creighton ended the Ironman streak for, help me here, blonde-haired, came from St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. I know Gary Unger?
Gary Unger. See, I am showing my age.
No.
That's what you got to look forward to in the next 20 years, Tom. I'm there. Unge, he left him on the bench all game. He was dressed and the guys are saying, Unge, get out there. You can tell what's going on. And Gary got up and Freddie just grabbed him by the back of the shin.
Really? And what happened there that he did that to him?
He just didn't like Gary for some reason. I mean, Gary was a bit of a freelancer, I guess, the team structure and on how he wanted the game played. It was a strange night. It was really, I mean, how do you end a guy's Ironman streak by doing that, by embarrassing him?
Yeah, and you'll lose respect from the rest of the team, too, for that.
Yeah.
So I know you're a very humble human being, okay? But I got to tell you, like, seriously, like Tom said at the start of the show, when I knew you were coming on, I was like a little kid. I was giggling, laughing. I couldn't wait to get you on. But you know what it is? Like I said to you before, like Sam Rose and Kenny Albert and others, and yourself is in the same category. You know, a historic voice. When you hear your voice, we just, okay, like you hear Sam Rose's voice, that's Sam Rose. And you hear Jeet McDonald's voice, we know that's Jeet McDonald. But it's a way, I think, if you go around the league and you talk to people, it's the way people think about you as a human being, too. Like, did you ever think at the start of your career that you're going to have the legend that is your career, make the Hall of Fame, all those things?
No, never. I didn't know what to expect. Working for Jack Kent Cook, he had that broadcast background. We had a meeting. Every home game, we would have a meeting in his office before the game, how we were going to sell the game. There was another quick story here. He didn't like right now today, you couldn't play for Jack Kent Cook because of the hairline, Tom.
Oh.
Noel Price. Pricey had to get out of there because he was bald. There was one, he was trying to make a deal with Chicago. And for the life of me, I can't remember who it was, but he wanted this individual to have the game of his career this particular night. Reason being, and he told us why, because Bill Wirtz was driving between San Francisco and L.A., and he would be listening, and he wanted this particular player and tried to trade him. Red Kelly must have got wind of this. I didn't tell Red. He did not put this guy on the ice, but for three shifts. Old Cook was livid. I could write a book about Jack Kent Cook.
Yeah,
the 5 years there. I mean, the man was absolutely incredible. But that would be, you know, learning the NHL lifestyle. Out there, altogether different than had I taken a job maybe in Pittsburgh or wherever, going to that market, trying to sell the game. Like in the story that's been written so many times, there was over a 500,000 Canadians in Los Angeles and try to get them out to a game, and Cook was famous. His famous quote was, the 500,000 Canadians here all hated hockey.
what was the other joke, too, when I first got there? They'd call and say, what time's the game start? And they'd say, what time can you make it?
I was our summer jobs was to sell season tickets. Number one, to try and keep people who had season tickets and had decided to give them up. The very first year, it was an automatic renewal, like your Reader's Digest or whatever. And that went to the courts, or at least to an attorneys. And they said, no, this is illegal. You've got to give people the right to cancel their tickets. Can't just renew automatically. So we got a percentage for saving a season ticket holder, and so much if we had a new season ticket holder. So I called this guy one day, and he said, say something else. Is it really you? And I said, yeah, it's Chicks McDonald. He said, well, I'll be damned. I've had Laker tickets for all these years, and Chick Hearn has never called me. Well, I thought, geez, here's my chance to get out of doing this. So we had a daily meeting. At the end of the day, Jack Kent Cook, how many calls did you make? How many sales did you make? And this, Mr. Cook, listen to this. What? We said, what? Chick had never called him? Monday, Chick Hearn is in the office calling people. And Chick, I mean, I've got a target on my back, Tom.
Oh, man.
Another one, he said, How many games, how many home games? I said, at that time, we were playing a 72-game season, I think. So 36 home games. He said, and that's from October till April. He said, let me ask you something. He said, if Warner Brothers were to make 38 movies in that span, would you expect me to see 38 movies? He said, I'll pick out the movies I want to see and the games I want to see. How's that?
Oh, yeah. That's funny. What a change when Wayne got there, I'll tell you, right off the bat. A year and a bit.
The equivalent to that would be with the Panthers at the end of my career when Pavel was there. And, we went to the game. Maybe Annika will be here.
Jiggs, you're one heck of a man. You've had a great life.
Oh, I've had a splendid, splendid life, great career. Yeah. You mentioned the voice being distinctive. My kids will tell you, my wife will tell you that there are two different voices. There's one when I'm talking to you or on the air or whatever, and there's another when I mumble around home here. You know, you can't understand me.
I have a hard time believing that. I have a hard time. Listen, you are one, and I really mean this, you're one of my favorite people I've ever met in my life, and I really got glad to have you on the show, and you're in my life too. So thank you very much for coming on.
Tom, you're too kind. Both times. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
Coming on.
We'll have you on again. Some more stories. You can tell stories all day long.
Look forward to it anytime, my friend.
Thanks, Jiggs. I couldn't stop smiling. Like, my face is sore because I smiled so much after that show.
I'm glad we did that. I knew that was going to be a big show for you because when I mentioned that we had booked him, you were really excited. You're like, oh, that's so great. That's so great. And you carried it through the whole show. What a great guy. What an awesome episode. Great stories.
So I'm still fired up right now. I can't believe he's such a good guy, too.
I didn't say this on air, and I was a hockey rat as a kid. I loved going to games. I'd go to Devil games, Ranger games, Ireland games. But I remember the 84 All-Star game was at the Meadowlands in Jersey. And my friends and I, we skipped school because they did I think that was the first year of the skills competition. It wasn't like it is now. Right. But I remember we snuck around, we waited for autographs, and we went on the bus afterwards, the Western Conference bus. Jiggs McDonald was there. And he took time to talk to me and my three or four friends just about whatever, just about hockey. And it was like, this guy should be like, get off the bus, kids. And he was super cool and super nice. I always remember that. And you could see that. It's the same guy now as he was then.
I know. Isn't it amazing that, we talked about on the show, Sam Rose and Kenny Albert, these guys are great at their jobs and just, fantastic people, too. Maybe that's what helps them be so good at their job, too. People really want to be on the show with them or be interviewed.
Or at least helps them stick around that long because people want them around because they're positive, they're kind, they're good people who, you just want to be like you. You're still smiling, and here we are. You know, the show's over already.
Oh, man, I'm fired up. Seriously, I've got a full sweat going here. I'm just
so no, fired up. And, you know, he's that Islander. He's the voice of the Islanders, you know, all those wins against you and the dynasty and yet still just a good guy, just a really solid human being.
So, I know you know this already, but when you get on YouTube, you start watching certain things. I don't know the terminology for it, but now you get more of that stuff coming towards you. So, I'm getting a lot of the Islander Ranger games now. So, I listen to the games and he's doing it on game. It brings back the memories of the games, the cells, the plays that happen.
The algorithm found you. So
the algorithm. You've had some good words lately. In some
I do. I'm trying to use that English.
Etymology.
That's the study of the origin of words. I'm trying to use that English degree 30 years later. So I think it's coming in handy now. But what a great show with Jiggs McDonald. It was awesome. He was on just a kind guy and just, you know, like you said.
We had some great shows, but that was one of my favorites. So there's probably 10 of them in that top category. But
you could see it. But it's a great trivia question. Did you score against the Islanders?
I don't think I did. It was funny you asked that question, and I thought to myself, no, I don't think I did,
Wow.
It didn't go really past the blue line in the other team.
I know you scored against Chico Resch, because that comes up. You scored against the Devils.
Yeah, that was he was with the Flyers at that time.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yes, Chico Mesh.
Did you score against the Devils?
I must have scored against I'm pretty sure I have. That'd be interesting to go back and look and see what teams I didn't score against, right?
Well, there's probably a lot of them.
Yes, Stoli, yes. What if I had multiple goals against one team? I don't think I
did. It came up on the show, but you didn't score. You played a year and a half with Gretzky, didn't score a goal.
I know. That happened. It became pretty funny in the locker room, like almost to the point, I'm just never going to score. Yeah.
Would Wayne bust your balls about it or no?
No, he really didn't. He was pretty careful. He would bust balls, but he was careful about stuff like that. He was, I think he felt like he really understood his place in the game and how he could affect people. Like, you know, everyone else could say something. It wouldn't be a big deal, but Wayne said it to you then.
So, who did he chirp? Did he chirp anyone? McSorley, maybe?
Bernie. Well, he did, sure. But I just say he was careful. So when he first came to the team or training camp, I think we were up in Victoria, and he got on the ice early, I think it was. And I took his, no, I was going to go on the ice early. So I took his hockey socks and I sewed them together at the bottom.
Hold on. You sewed Wayne Gretzky's hockey socks together.
Yeah. Totally. So, you know, I was a practical joker when the assistant captain of the team was like, okay, I'm going to welcome him to the team with this funny joke. And he comes up the ice and barely, he was smiling, but he wasn't mad, obviously, but he wasn't just cracking up laughing. He comes over and goes, Tom, 10 years PRO. Like, 10 years PRO. Like, that's the first time I've seen that kind of stuff. Yeah.
He said PRO?
Yeah. He said 10 years PRO.
So basically, I didn't know. I'd never heard. That's a great story. So he's basically saying, "Don't mess with me."
But you know, it was more like, "You think you're going to get me?" Like, you know,
just... Oh, so he foiled your plot.
I think he either saw it or like just the assumption is that he's going to try to put his foot into it, and then you end up falling forward because your foot doesn't go all the way through.
Right.
But the trainer told him or something. But I think he didn't want me to know, or maybe I did get him. He just didn't want me to know it.
So,
but it was good.
So that was the only time you tried to pull up.
We were smaller stuff. But then, you know, I said first time there, you want to kind of make it for you.
Welcome to the team. 10 years PRO. That's great.
He was really smooth with it too. Yeah, 10 years PRO.
Like, dude, you know, it reminds me of when you were at Sportorama last week, and I mentioned this on the previous show, and I was like, "Hey, Tom, so here's how it's gonna go." You're like, "I've done this before." Fair enough.
But great
show. Could you imagine though, if you could have changed history again, if Gretzky would have put his foot in there, fallen on his face, maybe broken his nose or broken a hand, couldn't be the same player he was, hockey would have been changed forever.
It reminds me when we were at practice and Craig Patrick, who was coaching us, coaching GM, and he's skating around at practice, and I'm shooting pucks at his feet. And did I tell you this story?
Yeah.
He's going around the corner and I hit him with really the perfect timing. He was just doing a crossover. So I hit the one foot I hit was the only foot he had on the ice. So he goes and falls down and falls on his face and gets a black eye. I've got to go to a business meeting later.
He could have cut you. He could have traded you. He could have done a lot of things here. And he was just kind. And he's like,
He's more looking at me like, what, you idiot.
And that's why you invented the term mudhead, because that's where it applies, you know? What a great show with Jigs McDonald. I'm glad we got to have him on. You got to speak with him. If you like the show, please, we're seeing some great reviews on Apple. Thank you for doing that. And, leave us a message, comment, tell us who you want to see, and just like this podcast. Share it around. Tell your friends.
Good job today.
All right, Grasshoppers, thank you for listening. We had a fantastic show. We'll see you next time.